Are you ready? Welcome to the
Ready.
Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast, episode number 143, with Paul S. Esposito, which has really been hard for me to say, even though I've known Paul for 20 years with Star Consultants. Paul was the guy that helped me really understand metrics. Thought I was doing great, and after he questioned me a couple times, I knew that even though I thought I was doing great, I was not measuring anything. I was basically just measuring with we don't have any accidents and everybody seems to be smiling and happy, and that's not really a measurement of safety over in the workplace. Paul, could you take a couple seconds and just kind of do a little background about yourself, and then let's do a little intro on why that we do these metrics.
Sure thing.
Thank you.
Well, my name is Paul Esposito. I am a certified industrial hygienist, certified safety professional. I was fortunate enough to graduate from Hopkins, Johns Hopkins. And, in the first 10 years of my work, I was working for insurance companies and consulting companies, et cetera. And, I thought I knew stuff. I thought I knew regulations. I thought I knew some safety tips and tricks, and I thought I knew how to measure workers' comp and incident rates and all that kind of stuff. And I did. But it started to dawn on me as the challenges mounted up and the issues became much more than just what was covered by regulations that I really didn't know a lot. All right. So I was very fortunate to have worked for a couple of consulting companies before I started my own in 1997. And I was also doubly fortunate to pretty much start off with OSHA's Voluntary Protection Program and start doing assessments for companies that were in VPP. The advantage was that these companies are the leading companies. So I started to learn very quickly from them some of sort of the state of the art, the cutting edge type things that were going on. That could have been with safety, that could have been with metrics, it could have been with anything. So whether a company was doing Six Sigma or they were doing TQM, total quality management, predictive maintenance, et cetera, all of those things dovetail, right, into how do we make safety equivalent to the other business functions and then really drive the protection of the employees, the protection of the property, and the protection of the businesses, right? So that's sort of my background. I've worked for Fortune 500 companies, and when it comes to metrics, obviously that gave me the clue to get started. But I mean, I started writing about metrics a long, long time ago. In 2014, I wrote about balanced scorecard for risk management. I've written a couple of articles in 2018 and 2020. I just, wrote a chapter in Professional Safety Handbook on management systems and management systems assessments. And I was most recently involved in both the risk management ANSI standard as part of the committee and authorship, as well as the Z16.1 standard, the ANSI standard on safety performance metrics. So that came out in 2022, and we're now getting our committee back together and thinking about, well, what do we need to do to rewrite it? What did people get? What did people understand? What did they not understand? And since then, of course, I've been teaching, 2 and 4 hour courses through the variety of ASSE, and the No, then you get to hear firsthand what people really get or don't get. So there's definitely been some learning along those lines that we can share in a little while. So the my go-to sort of was Thomas Krause because he liked to measure the positives, right? What are the things that drive safe behaviors, safe controls, safe treatment methods, et cetera? And just organizational accountability, but he took it from the standpoint that if you measure the what people are doing well or what they could be doing well, they sort of get the message what needs to happen to do well, as opposed to the opposite approach is, oh, don't have any accidents. Nobody has control over that when there's hazards in the workplace.
Right.
So, one of my biggest eye openings was actually, zero injuries is great. Motherhood and apple pie is a terrible goal.
Right.
Because in a risk world where there's nothing that's free of risk, whether it's personal risk, business risk, achieving zero accidents certainly can happen for a while, but it'll always fail. What can we do to transform our thinking to measure the positives that can always succeed? And that's sort of what clued me in. That's what we tried to do with the ANSI standard, the Z16 standard.
Very good. I know that when I had stumbled upon you, give or take 2005, whatever the time frame was, I can't call it a challenge, but my boss said, so we don't have any accidents, but what makes you think we're doing good? And I was like, well, we don't have any accidents. Everyone's smiling. I'm doing all this stuff to make sure that we don't have accidents. And they were like, well, how do you know if you're not measuring it? So it was really good because I was so busy working. I wasn't thinking about measuring it. I was trying to get my lockout tag out stuff done. I was trying to get training done on time. I was trying to do all this. And in theory, I was doing a great job of doing positive and proactive stuff, but I never sat down to track it. I just kind of figured this is kind of what you actually do. And I found out that I wasn't as good as I thought I was, too, at the same time then. So it was really great to bring in and kind of give us a class and say, now let's focus on the positive stuff that you guys are doing, So, yeah.
And the right positive things, and then also holding the right part of the organization accountable. We were just having a discussion. We had a committee meeting for Z16 and said, the challenge with these leading metrics, if they don't go the right way, they blame the safety person. And they said, dude, the people that get hurt, the people that spec the equipment, that buy the equipment, aren't the safety people. They're not accountable to that, just like HR isn't accountable for whether or not people show up on time.
Right.
HR has a rule for it, but that's to let help management manage.
Right.
And that's the same thing with safety. So, and so measuring the right part of the organization, especially in a positive manner, is just it. You could read Krause's books. He has a couple of them. And I just really like his approach. It certainly gives you plenty of case studies. And it's not all safety related. It's business related, which is what I really liked about it.
Right. Well, that's what safety actually is, because you always have to go back and prove your cost benefit. I'm going to do this. I'm going to, anytime that you say, I'm going to train somebody in this, almost everybody says, awesome, great. But if you take my person off of the factory floor, well, now they can't make X, So how do we really balance out that whole thing then, And sometimes it's very easy to balance it out with math. And other times it's really difficult to mathematically figure it out. Everybody can say in a qualified sense, hey, awesome, it sounds great, but trying to really quantify it can be really difficult to do.
It has been until you really start analyzing, and I'm very fortunate because I've run businesses for myself and for other people and departments and whatever. So, when you run a business, you're looking at a lot of bottom line numbers.
Right.
And, I just tried to, when I would go into a facility and do an audit or whatever, I'd say, well, what are they measuring and how do they communicate that? And does it seem to be working? And you interview people about that and you say, okay, well, why can't we in safety do the same thing?
Right.
And measure the positives and have these little red flag indicators that pop up when things aren't going well, just like they have little red lights on equipment when they start failing and you're not making production anymore, right? Somebody rushes to the scene. Well, what's our red light, But in addition, what's our green light? How do we know things are green? And it's got to be something other than just counting accidents.
Oh, right. I know that when I first had started out, so I came up with a metric for training, for monitoring the monthly like training, was it going to be done on time and all that, kicked it around with the managers. And the first year we kind of thought that it was going to be a stretch goal of 70%, so we got that 70%, and then every year we ratcheted it up. We're at 95% now, and it's really rare that we don't meet that goal. But that's also 20 years of people buying into the program, not like a, hey, I'm just rolling out something. So I do think that as safety people, sometimes we have to kind of almost think like we're like a farmer. We're going to plant a seed, we're going to water it, and of course, obviously, the corn doesn't grow overnight. It takes time to do its thing, and
It does take time.
I also found that if you can have the folks manage it a lot more too, the supervisors and all that stuff, because as safety folks, we're typically one deep. So at some point we got to go home. At some point we call in sick. We got to travel to another site. So it really has to be the folks really have to own it. It can't be us who goes back and monitors it. We can do some supervising a little bit, but they have to really own it, of course,
And that's why we have to give them data that they can trust.
Yes.
So if they don't trust the data, they're not going to own it, they're not going to believe it, et cetera, et cetera. So you've really got to establish some trust, and that doesn't necessarily happen overnight either, because you may think you're collecting good data, and then you go out, you find out people are lying to you, or the data is being fudged. That's why you got to audit, and validate it. And then once you do that, and you start So I've always been a big proponent of pilot. Don't roll it out to the company. Roll it out to one department, somebody who's an ally, a friend, somebody who sort of has at least some symbiotic thinking towards worker protection, and get them to really excel. And then you can start discussing it with the organization. And when you get the first, well, that'll never work here. I said, well, I just did it for the last 3 months. What are you talking about? And you already have an advocate. You already have an ally. You already have an ambassador. So, definitely pilot it, work out the kinks, work out the bugs, figure out what your data streams are. And, not most of the leading metrics that, as you just alluded to, counting the number of training courses you have, you schedule them anyway. You don't always need a database to collect and analyze this data. And sometimes it's very, very simple. Now, would a database, an automated inspection process help me analyze my non-conformance data? Oh, absolutely. So there's definitely advantages to the database approach, but you don't have to have it.
A lot of my work has been over on government sites, so we can't take photos, we can't do that kind of stuff. So we're still a little bit old-fashioned pen, paper, and all that good stuff then. So some people can really take advantage of that new software, and it'll kick out an action item to somebody, and it'll track it, and it does all that good stuff, and that's great. I just haven't had a chance to really dive into all that stuff yet,
Yeah, there's a couple
so.
of good providers out there, and they're getting better and better.
Oh
I haven't
yeah.
heard anybody absolute, conform to the ANSI Z16 standard yet with it, but we're working on it.
Well, you're always going to have folks who say, but it beats the spirit, and while that's, maybe it beats the spirit and maybe not, of course, so. Could you talk about some of the like traditional metrics that you've seen work, and then of course some of the traditional ones that we used in the past, and now we're smart enough not to use these traditional ones anymore?
Well, I'll tell you a story with for the first one. So, a lot of people realize that, you got to go out and do inspections, certain inspections required by OSHA, et cetera, et cetera. And this one committee was charged with doing inspections, and they just said, you know, we're doing inspections. We've done them for the last 2 years. How do we know we're making an impact? Right? What do we need to report back other than we did our inspections? We don't know if they're quality. We don't know if the hazards are being reduced because of it. We don't even know if they correlate to anything. So the idea of the metrics is there's no, and they figured this out, there's no one leading metric that can measure effectiveness of anything. Just like there's no lagging metric that can measure the effectiveness of anything. So if we're going to go out and do inspections, do we measure the number of inspections? Sure. That's an activity metric. In the Z16 standard, we borrowed something from business called logic metrics. So that means an activity has an input and has an output, right? So when you go and do an audit of an inspection process, the input is, oh, this is your inspection checklist. When was the last time it was updated? And you get that deer in the headlights look saying, we're supposed to update these.
Right,
I said, well, if
exactly.
you're checking for controls and you just got done doing a new risk assessment, a new JHA, and you identified new controls, then in theory, your checklist should be updated on every month, every quarter, every 6 months, something, some sort of frequency. So that's the input. What's the quality of the checklist you're using, and what's the training given to the people doing, right? So training could be, oh, follow me around once and you're trained. That could be it, right? So those are the inputs, right? But the outputs are probably, I can't say they're more important because it's really a chicken and egg thing. But if I'm doing all the inspections, you already mentioned you got to measure the action plans and closure rates, right? Well, we can do trend analysis as well to find out, well, what. And this I saw at a VPP site. They were actually doing it for contractors. They required the contractors to go out and they did inspections of the contractors. And whenever there were repeat findings or trends where a certain category kept showing up as a non-conformance, the contractor would be notified and they would have to write back saying, what were we going to do different? So it's sort of like an accident investigation without an accident, right? And that made a lot of sense. So what grew out of that was this sort of universal output metric, not an outcome, output metric, which is conformance rate.
I'm going to take a note on that, because that sounds like something that I could definitely steal and use.
So a
Very
conformance
good.
rate, whether you're doing observations, inspections, et cetera, is if you have controls and you have 10 items on your checklist, right? And they fail two of them, your conformance rate's 80%. Now, you can measure the failure rate, which is 20%, or the positive, which is the conformance rate. And I prefer to measure the positive. Right? So you can, once you start motivating people to score better, or let's say you've got a list of 80 things you look for, you go through and strategically look for the high hazard risk items. So maybe within, the electrical category, you have five or six things you look for, but one or two are absolutely essential for preventing serious injuries. Well, then you start measuring conformance rate on what we call the critical to safety, CTS. And critical safety is where you have high severity potential. Forget the term risk, focus on severity. Now, risk can imply, a lot of frequency of failure, but if the frequency isn't really going to be severe, I would agree, work on it, but not until you've solved your severity issues first. You know, the things that can really go wrong and really hurt business. We had a company one time, they had their, and the thing is, you're in compliance when these things go wrong. We had a company that was redoing their air conditioning on a roof, and they had a fire watch, right? You're supposed to have a fire watch because they're welding. Well, what they didn't count on was at some point, the duct work between the roof and below disengaged, and it was a hole. Well, the hole had sparks then come down onto some flammable materials that people were using to make something. They had a fire. They had a sprinkler system. But by the time the sprinkler system kicked in, they lost process line. And it happened to be the only part in that division that the only department in that division that made that part for a certain customer.
Oh boy.
That customer didn't get that part for 2 more months.
Yeah.
Do you think that customer went somewhere else in that meantime to go get those parts?
Oh yeah.
I think so. I think so. Do you think they came running back when you fixed your new facility? I don't think so.
Right.
This is a case where you were doing everything in theory that you're supposed to do, and yet it was a critical juncture and they didn't really analyze it correctly and measure conformance. So the conformance says, well, it's like, I remember doing inspections on eyewashes, and it said, what are the 5 things you're supposed to look for in an eyewash? And they go, 5 things? Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was 5 things. Well, yeah, there's mm-hmm. 5 things. If you read Yosha, there's 5 things you're supposed to look for. How many do you look for when you go out and do inspections? I went to this one facility and I'm walking around and they have a furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And right next to the furnace are the copper pipes to provide the water. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what the water temperature was when I tested the eye wash?
I'm sure that it was over 70.
It was over 100. They had a temperature way over 100, and not that it was going to scald somebody, but it was going to feel awful uncomfortable if you had to poke your eyes in there to begin with.
Oh, yes, exactly.
OSHA has a regulation that's supposed to keep the water sort of temperature neutral.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody even looked for it because they didn't tell themselves exactly what they really were looking for.
Right.
What are all the controls that are really supposed to be in place? And do we know that all the controls are in place? And, Deepwater Horizon is just a classic example of that, where mm-hmm. they had 7 controls, and then over time now they had used 5, and then they used 3, and nothing was happening. So they went down to 2 or 3 controls, and guess what?
Mm-hmm.
When the stars align, the worst things happen.
Yep.
So, and unfortunately, it happens to the best safety programs.
Oh, yes. I think that some folks, not in the safety realm, but others will feel that pressure of, I know that I'm breaking a safety rule, but it's temporary because we're working on it, so it's not like a permanent situation. We're working on this whole thing, but I got to get my maintenance crew up here and they got to do a few things. And, you can still have an issue that fast.
So if you've gone through the exercise of knowing what your critical safety controls are, then you can administratively manage that to say deviations from these are not within the purview of a supervisor. So let's say you're having a breakdown, and you've got to make some decisions to continue with production. Well, that's fine. Let's put together some interim controls, but don't leave it up to the supervisor because they may or may not know what all the interim control possibilities are. There might be a team you have to get together. Maybe you have to contact the safety manager to get a waiver.
Right.
But, those can be played as well. So we had one site that had stop work authority for their employees. So they would go question management. They'd say, well, we don't think this is safe because you haven't really answered questions on this, and this. Next morning, they'd come in and the job done. Because they asked second shift to do it, and second shift didn't do the stop work.
Right, exactly.
So what we had to do is the stop work procedure had to have a restart procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So that somebody independent of that department knew that the job was stopped from a safety standpoint, and the restart needed some sort of independent level. But all of these things are metrics, right? How many safety stops did you have? Why do we continue? You know, are the numbers going up or down? Is which one is good?
Right,
Yep. Yeah.
exactly.
But it, more importantly, are we making sure that we capture the right interim controls if we got to move forward? And then do we test those controls and then get a conformance rate on the interim controls?
Well, somebody has to go out there and say, well, we have zero risk. So, well, I shouldn't say that. There's no way
No.
that, right. There's no way that we're going to have zero risk. And thus, is it safe enough for, let's call it the risk appetite the company has, or
Exactly.
like the management has
Yeah,
in that
well,
case, you
you
know?
got trained people in a workforce. They can adjust and still get the job done as long as it's not going to result in other unintended consequences, right? Or even intended consequences. You just don't want it to happen. So this conformance rate is awesomely powerful. So one of the other places I've seen it used, David, is you know, have you ever had a, I'm sure you have, a safety briefing in the morning?
Oh
Ever been
yeah.
part of one of those,
Every
right?
single day at 7:30. Oh yeah.
That, you know, they're one of the biggest farces ever to put into a safety program. And the reason is, if my message this morning was so flipping important, don't you think tomorrow I ought to open my meeting with, how did we do yesterday? Where's the conformance rate from yesterday if it was so important yesterday? So what do you think when you go and interview these workers that sit in these safety pre-start meetings, what do you think their attitude is? Says, you know, every day they tell us something's important, but then they never tell us how we did. So guess what we're going to do? Do what the hell we want.
Follow-up is always critical, and I have found that there's a lot of safety folks who really struggle with follow-up. I know that I did when I was a young man because I thought I was smart, and when you think you're smart, sometimes you don't feel that need to go back and follow up with people. You gotta follow up because those guys are actually the smart ones. Me, I work in a cube. I'm not the one who has to worry about all the hazards and all that. Those guys are the true experts out there.
My first boss, I worked for an insurance company and I used to go out and do inspections. And my first boss told me, he goes, you know, you're going to write a report and you're going to write these recommendations. They're going to be lovely. How do you know anybody's going to do it? And he goes, unless you gain commitment from them before you leave by explaining the hazards and explaining the risk, you don't even stand a 50-50 chance that these things will be done. So now we didn't really have the authority to follow up like the next week in the insurance business. It took us a couple of years. But of course, that's exactly what we did. Even if it did take a couple of years. But I learned very quickly that it's got to happen a hell of a lot sooner than that.
So, but yes,
To
that
be able to be
follow-up
effective.
is really, 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 really critical. I have found that sometimes folks struggle because they burned a bridge and now they have to go back and talk to those
Yes.
folks like, oh, well, now I got to go back and talk to them, but I've already burned that bridge by doing something wrong. I forced my authority, whereas opposed to, safety guys, we really can't force people. We can say, hey, look,
Yep.
we recommend it's really not a good plan, but once you force somebody, well, their natural, that natural like reaction is, oh yeah, well, I'm not going to do it now. So,
And that's where conversation about a conformance rate without the without the expectation that's always going to be 100%.
oh,
Right?
yes, exactly.
So you go back the next day and say, look, you know, you guys did pretty well. Your conformance rate was 87% yesterday. And they look at you like, you think 87% is good? I said, well, I'd certainly like it better, but hell, you know, it's the first time I'm giving you guys feedback. I think that was pretty good for not having any feedback.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
Exactly.
so, but we have the tools. This is why I like the Krauss approach. Make it positive. 87 is praised, but the deal is We want it to continually go up.
Right.
And 100% is just a wish list. Don't make it 100%. And if you're going to have recognition awards for people that achieve their goals, especially at the worker level, that's what you're really trying to do. You want to gain people's understanding that this is what's really important, that you need to follow the procedures and do what the controls are. And if you don't like them, then you got to speak up and let me know so we can change them.
Right,
But
right, right.
until I give you conformance rate data, and then if you really want me to motivate you, I'm going to tie the recognition and awards back to the conformance rate.
Right.
So if every Monday morning we have a safety meeting and we give you donuts, guess what? Donuts only show up if you hit 90% last week. Right? Now, the people that work in that department that like donuts are now your ambassadors. They know who the people are that screw up. Right? And they're going to say, I want my donuts. Don't screw up. Do it right. Use the right tool. So I get my donuts on Monday morning. Sometimes the
I like that.
simplest thing, yeah, simplest things, but again, you're doing it with metrics, measuring the right thing on the right per people, and tying it to positive performance that you can recognize. Right?
Yes.
I don't like the term incentive. I'm not a fan of incentives. Certainly, I just don't like the word. It's recognition and awards. Reward, for doing the right thing. Because you and Krauss will give you tons of examples as to why that works really well, but really, really well on almost everybody. There's two types of people, though, that doesn't work on. All right. First of all, teenagers. If you're a parent and you try to do this, that's fine. But as soon as your kid hits 13, you might still lose.
Yes, I have a couple teens now, right in the really fun ages. So yes, I know
Yep,
that
I that you could lose there. And then there's another type of individual out there called a cave person. A cave person is a
well.
citizen against virtually everything.
Interesting. I don't know if I've heard that before.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've heard it from somebody. I can't. It's
Right,
or I
right,
can't even tell you who. But
right.
cave people, by definition, are going to be the disgruntled people that never want to do anything. But if you can find out what recognition they want, if it's the donuts, if it's pizza, whatever, and get everybody to agree to it, once you can get some of those people to be your ambassador, man, you're gonna be sailing.
Very good, very good. Paul, we are having a great talk, but we are bumping up on time.
Okay.
Could you take a couple seconds, let people know how they can find you, can reach out to you for some more help with metrics or things like that?
Well, certainly have a website, starconsultants.net. You can get in touch with me from there. My email's on there. Some stories are on there. Some tools and tips and tricks are on there. And just basically information about Star Consultants. We've been in business since 1997. And I did consulting for a bunch of years before that. And I like to just take the opportunity to work with people and share with them things that I've learned from working with some of the best of the best over the course of years. I don't have all the answers, but sometimes you just, especially with metrics, you really got to go back to the basics and understand what are the key leading metrics that can be instrumental to motivating behaviors, performance, and conformance. And that's the big deal.
Exactly.
So,
Thank you, Paul. I didn't get through probably about a quarter of what I wanted to ask you, so m maybe we can set up a couple more of these in the future. Thank you so much.
yeah, I
And
didn't really get to talk about the Z16 standard at all. But anyway, David, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
thank you so much, Paul. You have a
Okay.
great day. Thank you, everybody.